if you happen to really love that song. That's the New York Ska Jazz Ensemble with Take Five. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. And as you know, on Fridays, there's only one thing to do, which is to speak your mind. This is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. And if you don't have an opinion today about something, I think you ought to check your pulse because you are dead. No question about it. You are one dead duck if today you don't have an opinion. So let's hear what your opinions are. Of course, this is the forum. It's an open forum, and listeners are the drivers of this program. You call in at 888-874-4888, and we get into it. I'd love for you to make it plain where you stand. Don't be wishy-washy like some things we saw yesterday. Be absolute in your thinking, meaning absolutely clear in your thinking. You don't have to be absolute, but clear, absolutely clear. 888-874-4888. Just to remind you what the purpose of the program is. It is a way of creating community, a way of us exchanging information, opinions, and ideas that encourage us to undertake further examination, further discussion, further debate. It is about giving a different view about things that are supposedly, cut and dried. But perhaps when we take a different look and we appreciate the full dimensions of a thing, we encourage other people to do exactly the same thing, to take an entirely different look at it and to come up with a different dimension as well. So this is our community education session. 888-874-4888. Let's start off in Ohio with Rick. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing,
Fine, thank you, Rick. How are you?
I am well. I certainly, I know many do, but we appreciate you being able to facilitate receiving live phone calls about current events. That's rare.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm glad that PRN actually has that mindset and makes room for that. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw an article yesterday, and I don't think it was The Onion. I understand that Jimmy Carter gave our intelligence on ISIS, the maps, to Russia.
Yes, he said so.
Yes, that is excellent. And my point is, they dare not, seek treason. I mean, that could be deemed as a treasonous act.
Well, I don't know that it can, because, number one, let's do some background here. President Carter said and admitted openly that his organization, his foundation, if you will, that does work all over the world in promotion of democracy. People could take issue with that. But he said recently that he provided maps to Vladimir Putin as to the locations of some of the targets that needed to be bombed, if you will.
Sure.
Of course, this has created a great furor, but it also has created an embarrassment. Number one, it was his maps. He said he used his resources and the resources of the organization to develop that. He said he also provided the same information to the United States. So I don't know that it could be considered treasonous, because it's not a betrayal of the country. He said that he had a personal relationship with Vladimir Putin, of course, as President of the United States and a former President of the United States himself, operating at a particular level. And this is what he did. And he didn't hide it. He said it. So
right.
Why would you think it is treason? Although some people do believe, I mean, it may not qualify in the strict sense of the law as a treasonous act, but many people in many quarters are thinking, well, it's as close as you could get to treason. What is your view?
Well, it's only because, you know, I'm pretty much accustomed to far-right positions, you know, just the rhetoric, the vitriol, all of that, the vitriolic approach to resolve, which is ridiculous to me, you know. I mean, I go online and I see the most horrific speech even posted by progressive action groups. And the mistake there lies in those groups simply posting the speech without refuting it. And so
let me ask you, this is a really interesting question. Here is a president, sure. A former president, who is, he talks a lot about peace and his interest in promoting peace.
Sure.
And yet this action by providing intelligence, if you will, providing mm-hmm. intelligence to Russia about the military targets that Russia should attack.
Or anyone
what does
fighting
it say
terrorists.
About, do you see any contradiction here, or do you see this as an appropriate act? How do you interpret the president's action?
President Carter?
Yes.
Sound. Absolutely sound. Absolutely. You know, I think that the mode in Washington currently is to, you know, they're wasting money. They're wasting resources. There's rhetoric. There is, you know, just it's just day after day after day of just, you know, I don't want to use profanity, but it is ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. And so for he or anyone to do it, it is absolutely sound judgment. I am not a
Sound contradictory to you? Does it sound like something particularly contradictory for the president? Does it sound that as if President Carter's actions, in fact, say something about his opinions about the current administration? What do you
Absolutely.
Think about this?
Absolutely. He's critical of it. And we all are, but we don't have the resource or the ability to reflect, you know, a more sound approach to solving our problems. Like he's right there. I mean, I'm totally behind that. Absolutely. Absolutely. If he ran for president, I would vote again. I've never voted for him, but I would. I would. I mean, that's crazy. Even though, he he's perhaps terminally ill, but that was absolutely very reasonable. Very reasonable. You know,
okay, Rick. Well, you got us started today. Let's see how people react to your view, and thanks for contributing
absolutely.
Today. And
Thank
thanks
you,
for
dear.
Starting off the program. We go to New York. Joel, you're on the air.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good. I hope you had a very good week.
It's been great. It's been great.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, I wanted to throw my two cents in about last week's Democratic presidential front runners' so-called debate. And I'm not really interested so much in what they said, but how it was perceived by the corporate media. If that's all right. And
sure,
the reason why I'm doing this is that about a day or two after the debate, I remember that CNN conducted a poll and they asked the question, who won the debate? And the result was that Sanders got something like 83% of all the respondents, answers that Sanders won. And that Facebook, I believe that Facebook, co-sponsored it with CNN, also took a poll. And also asked who won, and nearly 80%, I think something like 79%, said Sanders. But I remember very distinctly that the CNN editor's take was that Clinton swept confidently. And then Slate conducted a poll, and they asked the same question, who won. And 75% of the respondents said Sanders, and I think 18% gave it to Clinton. Hillary Clinton won, reported Slate's senior writer, Josh Voorhees. I remember reading this. He reported it exuberantly. She just needed to be solid in the debate. Instead, she was spectacular. I said to myself, spectacular, with 18% of Slate's own polling numbers? Go figure. Then Time chimed in. Who do you think won? And the response was that Sanders won 70% and Hillary won something like 16%. And the Time headline was Clinton in control. You see what I'm getting at? This really goes far beyond distortion and far beyond the tampering with facts that characterized Soviet-style reporting in Izvestia and Pravda. Remember Izvestia and Pravda in the decade before, you know, the USSR collapsed. This is in-your-face rejection of empirical reality. Say nothing of an insult to the viewer's poll. The entire mainstream news media then picked this up and is therefore complicit. Now, I'm not concerned about whether or not Sanders won that so-called debate. As far as I'm concerned, nothing was really discussed there of any intent or importance anyway. But it's the way it was covered and this distortion of the results of what people actually, you know, thought as to who won that concerns me. And imagine if the so-called free press was free to publish whatever its corporate editors want, including even the truth at their discretion, and told the story differently. Imagine if CNN had said, polls show big win for Sanders, or if Slate had said a great night for Sanders, or if Time had said Sanders trounces Clinton. But no, they're not going to do that. The TV cable news anchors took ages, you know, to concede that maybe Jeb Bush, despite his solid Republican National Committee support and Wall Street's firm endorsement, is not the inevitable GOP candidate. You remember that? It took them quite a while for them to say that. They've had to acknowledge, for whatever reasons, that Trump is actually striking a much deeper chord than Bush is among likely voters. So, but they're going to stubbornly refuse to recognize some things they don't want to see, things that
Let's take your Facebook CNN combo, the combination hosts of the last debate, so-called Q&A, I call it the Q&A. Well,
right.
You pointed at CNN declared Hillary Clinton to be the winner, and that Facebook declared Sanders to be the winner. And of course,
right.
What's surprising there?
CNN's
demographic, and CNN is going after the money. We talked about that. Discussed the role of campaign funds in this election and how it is shaping coverage and how it in turn is shaping our view. So CNN gets to anchor its plea or its case for advertising dollars by saying, look, in our demographic, Hillary Clinton wins. So now they can go to Hillary Clinton. Facebook, which is seeking to expand its universe, and its universe, the demographic is very different. It's a younger demographic. It can very well revel in the fact that Bernie Sanders won. So it can go to advertisers who wish to appeal to that demographic, that it has delivered a constituency or can deliver a constituency to them. Just this morning, CNN, I was so angry I didn't have a tape recorder at the ready for this little bite. On CNN this morning, when the national campaign manager for Donald Trump was being interviewed, and interviewed on the basis of, you know, in reaction to Hillary's decisive victory yesterday, which is what they basically covering it as. The question drifted over to Trump. How is the Trump campaign reacting to what they see in Hillary's performance yesterday and the Democratic Party's performance as a major Democratic victory? And I swear to you, I'm going to go find it. The host says to Trump's campaign, national campaign manager and strategist, when is Donald Trump going to start spending money? That's the question. I mean, they didn't cover it up. And I said, you know what? Give me a gold star, because I have said, this is exactly what the whole thing is about. When is,
yeah,
he asked a question, and I quote him verbatim, when is Donald Trump going to start spending money?
Yeah, well.
And this is what we have. So
well,
I want to bring this a little bit forward now. More than likely, you caught a little bit of the debates. Not the debates. You caught a little bit of that show yesterday, the 9-hour serial show. What did you think of it in light of your angle today with regard to media coverage?
Well, I have to tell you that I didn't see it last night. I heard about it, I think it would be rather presumptuous of me to offer. I have to see it on YouTube or something like that before I want to offer a comment on that. But I just wanted to bring this up, that their own polls contradicted the pitch that they're making for the reasons that you raise. I just wanted to say that, I've spoken about Sanders before on your program, and I'm not a Sanders supporter. You know, he's nowhere near left enough for me, thank you. But I'm not a supporter of a whole bogus, skewed, money-driven, two-party electoral system itself, which seems designed to hoodwink people, to channel their energies into itself, and then to produce disillusionment soon after the election, as the elected official reneges on promises and proves to be something other than a real harbinger of change. You know what I mean? The system is wired to then hoodwink people again, rechannel their energies again back into itself, bouncing people back and forth between two hopelessly corrupt parties that are really two factions of a single corporate party. A lot of energy expended, a lot of conviction about civic responsibility exploited. You know, you spin your wheels and nothing changes. That's the whole point. Wall Street, along with the political class in general, laughs at you. And in a way, the system is telling us, if you don't vote, you have nothing to say, and reduces political involvement to endorsing one of its always safe choices. And it excludes from the debate stage the merest discussion of needed radical change.
Well, I'm glad you didn't see any of this yesterday. So it's you're a perfect person to ask this question of. Having not seen anything that went on in Congress yesterday, from the way the media have covered it, what did it inform you of, as a person who hasn't seen it, what did they tell you happened yesterday?
Well, I haven't actually watched the media over the past day. I'm very uninformed over the last 24 hours, but I'll tell you this, Utrice, that the electoral process itself, and the media pushes this again and again, we both know, the electoral process is designed to keep you out of the street, and that's where history is really made, and lead you into a box. And for me, TV has sort of become a confessional booth, maybe a porno video cubicle, but it's a kind of private space in which you're touched by something greater than yourself, and supposedly you leave with a sense of gratification. You were a good citizen, like you were taught in school to be. You exercised your precious right to vote and did your part. That's what they're trying to do to us. And they're trying to suggest to us, because they always tell you have to vote, when they have their little, electoral shows on CNN, NBC, PBS, wherever. Casting the ballot, they say, in private is supposed to make you feel good about yourself as a kind of participant in the state. It's supposed to make you think that since you've actually participated in the construction of an existing polity, when you talk about what it does, you can accept personal responsibility for its crimes. You know what I mean? But when you vote, you're voting not so much for a person as for the system itself, validating the system and the rules surrounding the procedure. And the ballot is the state's highest ritual, the individual's most intimate connection with this, and that's why I taking Holy Communion at Mass. It's you're swallowing something and making a statement of faith. I believe in the system.
Oh my gosh, you cutting into everybody. I mean, even the Pope isn't safe from you today.
I think the Pope would have been as reviled as we are by what apparently happened last night.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Joel, for your call today.
Okay, bye-bye.
From New York City, we still are in New York City with Dave from Brooklyn. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Utrice. I wish you were back on BAI, even though I'm sure you wish you don't.
I cut that clean some years ago.
Yeah. I don't wonder why. Anyway, I'll try not to splutter because when I get on the radio, which isn't often, I tend to splutter. But anyway, your take on the non-debates was right on, spot on. I believe it was Tuesday of
yes.
this week. But that's not why I called, because I don't watch those question and answer crap. Because it's just a status quo thing. Bernie Sanders shouldn't even be in the Democrats because he's an independent. So I think he's just shilling to boost up Hillary.
So what did you call about today?
I heard Obama will not let any of the students who have debt declare bankruptcy. I kind of think that's heartless, as most of the things he's done. Because I used to listen all the time to Robert Knight, and he would give the real view of what's going on with Obama. And I remember when he was first elected, he was out of his mind happy. And just a short year and a half later, he was killing him, and rightfully so. And
well, I don't know why anybody would be happy if you understand systems and if you understood, and there was a lot of signaling that Obama did before he became president to indicate that he was not to be counted on as anybody's savior. He was beholden to the system. He was a Clintonite created by that machine. He held he was a selected person. He was a selected official, even at the state level. So that anybody would have some illusion that he was going to be markedly different from the expectations that we know that he was going to have to fulfill, I marvel that people actually had a view that he was going to be so different. Including people like Robert Knight. Robert Knight had a very good brain on his shoulders. I don't know what would make him to be so disillusioned about it. But
The euphoria.
Were you able to catch? Yeah, well, you know, euphoria is one thing, but euphoria should never really displace logic. I mean, you have a logical mind. You see what is going on. You can put two and two together. And certainly you could listen to the grassroots. The grassroots in Chicago were talking about Obama very differently from the euphoric way in which other people were talking about him. So people seemed willing to distrust or discard the view of the grassroots in Chicago. So we paid the price for this. And in a way, look, to a large degree, politics is about being pragmatic. But even so, I mean, this idea that all of this investment is being made for that, nobody said, well, this is what we want, or else, you know, there was no, or else, no demand really made of him. And so he used the currency the way people like him would use the currency, which is to advance the cause that suits him and that suits his patrons, the people who created him. So that's what we got. Did you watch any of the charade yesterday in Congress?
Oh, I couldn't bear to take any of that.
You couldn't take it either, huh?
I don't watch corporate media, and that whole thing was just part of the corporatocracy.
My God, I had to suffer through some of it. I watched quite a bit of it, I must tell you.
You're on the radio talking to people. You got to know what you're talking about, unfortunately for you.
So what is your mindset now about the whole political process? Is it something that you want to be part of anymore, or do you think that there's a different way? And if so, what is it?
That's a good question. I don't want to be part of it because it's all the corporatocracy. You got to be selected, and it's a whole charade to me. Because the last election that Obama got in, they purposely put Paul Ryan along with Romney, knowing that everybody who's on the fence is going to run to Obama because Paul Ryan wants to get rid of Social Security as we know it and Medicare as we know it. So it's all charades to me, so I try to keep away from the whole corporatocracy if I can.
Okay. What is the substitute for you? What is the thing that you believe more in other than the corporatocracy?
An independent party, another third party that's able to get in there, which right now they're not. Because the last cycle, they held Jill Stein against her will because she just wanted to get into the debates. That they won't even allow a third party. That's why Bernie Sanders is running as a Democrat instead of the independent that he is. But he's not really independent.
He says he is.
Yeah, he says he is.
But, okay, so then the political choices, based on what you have laid out here, the political choices are quite bleak.
Yeah.
The established parties are an absolute no-no to you. The third parties, as you call them, I imagine you're referring to the Green Party, and parties like it, are not up to snuff. Is there any exception that you see that is on the horizon that is worth looking at as a possible alternative?
I don't see it in the cards because of the way everything's rigged.
So if there is no political alternative, then what do we do? How do people get systems to, because it's all about systems of governance and government, what is that system that would work more effectively to reflect people's desires and, you know, for how their day-to-day lives are to be governed? I mean, what is that? You can't tell me that you just think nothing is going to work. I appreciate that view, but will it be the case forever that nothing will work, or do you see that at least there might be something of value in some other kind of movement? I'm just trying to figure out how you see it.
Revolution.
Revolution.
Yes. Because a peaceful resolution is not going to do anything. They got the NDAA, they'll just round everybody up.
Wow. That's a pretty daunting view, Dave.
And I'm pretty cynical.
But would people, do you think people are ready for a revolution in this country?
Nope.
You think that is possible given all of the ways in which such a movement or such a move could be thwarted and destroyed?
There can't be a revolution because people are too complacent. There can't be a real one. They're either too stupid or too complacent. Because Gary had somebody interviewing people in the street and asking them a question that I would know when I was six, and they had no idea. Well, like, name a country in Europe, and they couldn't do it. So I'm saying, how come they can't interview at least one person who knows something? These people were dumb as crap.
Well, it's not that they're so dumb. You know, it is that the system is so effective at creating dumbness.
That's exactly it.
That is what I mean. Systems are the thing. We have to understand systems theory and really get into formulating alternatives also based on systems theory, but that will work in behalf of people as opposed to against people. That is, I think, where the revolution should be, in organizing and orchestrating systems that work in the larger interest. You know, I think that's really where we ought to put some of our energy. Because the country, it's not accidental that given all the resources that the United States has, that we have what you just called a dumbed down population. That is not accidental.
Of course not.
At all.
They started that in the Roman Empire.
So, you know, we have to look at systems, how they work and how they don't work. Thanks, Dave, for calling in today and contributing.
Okay,
greatly appreciate it. 888-874-4888. Your opinions are the order of the day. You take the conversation where you want it to go. From Berkeley, Harvey, where do you want the conversation to go?
Hi. Hello, wonderful Utrecht.
Hello, wonderful Harvey.
Well, today I'd like to talk about moving away from fossil fuels such as coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear as fast as possible towards a clean, renewable future. And I'm talking about this in reference to Hurricane Patricia. It says here, Patricia, it's Hurricane Patricia's moving toward Mexico, and it's the strongest hurricane ever recorded, and it's going at 200 miles an hour. The winds are going at 200 miles an hour. Well, it turns out that a small plane like a Cessna takes off at 63 miles an hour, and a large commercial airplane takes off at 160 miles an hour, and this is 200 miles an hour. So this is just going to tear everything up. And what we're watching here is the price we're paying for carbonizing our atmosphere. Our excessive use of fossil fuels, like we have a billion cars doing two rush hours a day, all the trucks on the planet, all the machinery, all the construction machinery, all the farming equipment, all the buses, all the recreation vehicles, all the planes in the sky, all the boats in the ocean, all the utilities, they all use fossil fuels pretty much. And what this excessive amount of carbonizing our atmosphere is producing, turns out that when you heat up the atmosphere and the oceans, turns out that the utilities, a lot of them, thousands of them, they use a system called once-through system, where they, like the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, like right here off of the coast of California, it takes in 2.5 billion, with a B, billion gallons of water a day, and puts it back into the ocean at 20 degrees hotter. It's been doing that 365 days for 30 years, and there's thousands and thousands of coal-fired, oil-fired, natural gas, and nuclear power plants that are actually taking the ocean water, the lake water, the river water, and heating it up and putting it back in. And so that's another thing that hardly anybody looks at. And it turns out that by heating up the oceans and the atmosphere, we evaporate more water off the surface of the oceans, lakes, and rivers, and this excessive amount of water in the atmosphere heats up and moves faster and faster. It's the same thing like if you put a pot of water on the stove and you slowly turn up the heat and slowly starts moving around, slowly starts bubbling and moving. Well, this 200 mile an hour hurricane is the result of us carbonizing, of us heating up the atmosphere. It's the hottest year on record every year, and it really is time to reinvest into clean renewable energy if we want to sustain our life on the planet, because we are going to see some of the biggest storms, typhoons, hurricanes, tornadoes ever. There was the biggest tornado not long ago, close to 300 miles an hour in Cushing. That's basically along the route where they're going to put the pipeline there. And so, you know, these huge storms are new phenomena, and they are killers. So many people are going to get killed, and everything going to be wrecked because of this. So,
well, I appreciate that, the warning that you're giving, and I appreciate the logic of it. The facts are, in fact, that the Earth is heating up. We have enough information of that. But can you be so certain that it is because of this that we have this hurricane, or is it possible that hurricanes of this type, with this, you know, propensity to create incredible amounts of damage, have always been around, and this is just a cycle of nature. This is just how it works. How are you so sure that the hurricane that is heading toward Mexico, and with such force, and with the propensity to create such damage? And, of course, it's described as the first such hurricane in recorded history. How are we so sure that prior to the point of recorded history, there weren't such hurricanes?
Well, first of all, I'm reading a line here. It says, the strongest hurricane on record in the National Hurricane Center's area of responsibility, which includes the Atlantic and the Eastern North Pacific Basin. Well, we've been keeping record, and you're absolutely right. You know, there have been many ages where the Earth has heated up and cooled down. But part of the, you know, when we heat up the atmosphere, this is the result, because there's actually as much water vapor in the atmosphere as there are in the oceans, just about. And so think of it as an ocean. And so when we're heating it up, we're causing more and more turbulence within the structure. And it turns out also that water vapor itself, as we increase the amount of water vapor entering the atmosphere, water vapor itself is known as a greenhouse gas. And that what that means is that as the sun's the sunlight goes through it, it captures the sun's infrared heat and puts it out into the atmosphere. So it's not just carbon dioxide and various other elements that are greenhouse gases. Water vapor, intense forms of water vapor, like those put out by cooling towers in nuclear plants, are considered a major greenhouse gas. So we are just heating up the atmosphere. I think that we are responsible with 7 billion people on the planet using that much energy in a non-sustainable way. I think we are instrumental at this time in creating this effect. And I think that we can change it around. And one way is to go solar. Solar creates no emission. Once manufactured and installed, solar panels create no emission over their 20 to 25 year warranty. And so I say, let's get solar if we want to slow down, you know, if we want to cool the atmosphere down and slow down these huge storms that are such killers.
And I say you made a pretty good point.
Thank you so much, Chief,
for contributing.
Thank you.
888-874-4888. See, that's what I like about Harvey. He backs up his point of view with facts. Every now and then you challenge him, but he comes back and he says, look, these are some other facts that bolster my position. I really like that. 888-874-4888. Now, just before we get a little bit further into the program, I want to remind you that I really would like us to undertake as a project expanding the appeal of PRN.FM, expanding the appeal of lead stories on PRN, but really championing the station within your spheres of influence. You come to the station every day, and we gather with each other every day. I'd really like to encourage you to help me create a larger audience for the station and for the program by passing the word along to those people who are within your circles. Let them know this is how it's done, and this is the kind of work we have to do, and it's not really that hard. All you have to do is to tell your folks, the people that you relate to on a daily basis or on a regular basis, that this is where you turn to for really good programming, programming that is relevant to your everyday life, programming that increases your knowledge about the way things work, programming that is actually to your benefit, your personal and professional benefit. So why not pass the word along? Just so you know, I'm getting more and more word from people who, in their own way, they've organized lead stories listening groups. A couple of people organize among themselves and among their friends a small group that would listen to the program, and then they would hear it, you know, and they don't necessarily have to live within close proximity with each other. And they call and each other, and they set up little conference calls, and they talk about the program, and they send the program to other people to encourage them to listen. So I want to build that up, and I thank those of you who have already begun that. It's such a boost. It's a great, great thing, and it helps us reach more and more people, and it helps PRN actually fulfill its mission and its purpose by creating more programming that is relevant. But we need not be shy about the fact that promotion is not a bad thing. If you tell people about something that is beneficial to you, that is relevant to you, and you know people who are kind of like-minded, just pass the word along. I could absolutely use that kind of help. I really want Lead Stories and PRN to become a necessary reference point, much more so than it is now, to grow We have to show some kind of growth, and I'm all about that. I like the idea of being able to demonstrate that you are increasing your sphere of influence, and this helps because people gathered together as we are now gathering together, we are a community. And the more we exchange information, the more we talk to each other, the more we share our views, the more we engage, the more we build community. And as we've been discussing, and this is a constant theme, you can hear in the phone calls, we hear about people getting a greater understanding of how systems are organized against the general good, against general interests. And a huge, huge part of our salvation, if you will, is that because we are like-minded and because we see things in a particular way, we have to begin to share information that would offer people workable alternatives, a different way to see the world that will equip them to organize themselves far more effectively against annihilation, against victimization by these systems. It's very important. So I want to thank you very much for helping me promote Lead Stories and very much so promoting PRN.FM. It's a great station, and I really love the idea of coming together with a wonderful group of people who clearly have invested a lot in their thinking and from whom we can learn so much. This is the purpose, I say, of Lead Stories and of Free Your Mind Friday. It is the purpose of PRN to encourage that kind of growth, of independent thinking. And therefore, when you have a different perspective on things, it informs not just your opinions, but in turn, it informs your actions. So will you help me? Let me know. Give me a shout at leadstories@gmail.com and let me know how these programs are working for you, what you would like to see happen, and anything that is helpful. I'm very much open to it, but I am on fire about growing the program and growing PRN. 888-874-4888. We're coming close to the end of the program, and we have room for your calls at 888-874-4888. Next week, I'm going to tackle the charade that was yesterday in greater detail. I'll try and do that on Monday, because there's a lot to learn from what happened yesterday. It was a massive game of propaganda. It was very, very serious in its scope and in its impact. And it is worthy of discussion because of the terrifying parallel. You know, we will be talking about how people's minds are shaped, how media organizations are used, how we lose sight of what we ought to know, how we fall for the okey-doke, and how, especially in an election year, we have all kinds of games being played. And this is to be expected because this is the sameness of the system. It is very much the same. It is formulaic. It follows a particular pattern. But the thing that should concern us is on the flip side of that, there isn't a really cogent response, an effective response to it. And that is where we ought to focus. What do we do in light of this predictable behavior by those in power? What, therefore, is to be the effective response? We go to Allison. You're on the air from California.
Hello. Hi. I do have a different topic, but it is a lead story, and it is something that the public should know about that's not really being brought forward because of mainstream media interests and their sponsors. Last week in Cannes, there was a media event where the whole industries came together to show films There's a film called Rush, the documentary, an award-winning documentary that was premiered at the Monaco Film Festival last year. It features the most extraordinary, unusual technology this world has ever seen, and it's been in existence and tested by the public for the last 7 years. And it's a free technology the public can test. It's rather an unusual subject that nobody's talking about, and they really ought to be talking about, because there's over 1,300 cases applied to burn injuries and shingles where this strange technology is out there doing it. And I'm just amazed it's not making mainstream news, although I'm really not amazed, because they're obviously the most media have sponsored interests, and their news is curtailed to that and not upsetting their sponsors. But this is about a health technology that the whole world needs to see, and I urge the listeners to go on the internet and see Rush, an award-winning documentary, like Rush, Go Quickly, it's called. It's an hour long, and it's people who've tested this technology and know it's true. They're members of the public. They're ordinary, plain Joe blogs like you and me, and they've called their burns in or their shingles and other health issues, and it's fixed them at record time. And apparently it's a bioreparative technology that unfortunately puts some of the mainstream health industries out of work, so is partly why it's not being received as it should be in a grateful fashion, I think. But alerting
so it's called Rush?
The documentary R-U-S-H? Film is called Rush, yes, R-U-S-H. If people Google that or go onto YouTube and put Rush, an award-winning documentary, that is the title of it, it'll come up, and it's a health technology applied to all kinds of things. It's very extraordinary. It's outside of our typical education. It's using a method that is very unusual, but it's producing physical results under the medical, scientific, and media scrutiny. So this is a testing and a global experiment of proofs being given direct to the public for free. They can test this. So it's on burns and shingles, okay. And I urge... Thank you for listening. I'm okay. Very grateful you gave
Thank
me
Thank you for bringing that to our attention and for sharing that. Thank you, Allison from California. Let's go back to Brooklyn. Veronica, you're on the air.
This is about a health technology that the whole world needs to see.
Hello, Veronica?
Hello. Yes, good day. How are you?
Great, thank you.
I was calling from UAM, and we're having a political national black convention. We're going to be at Howard University, and I wanted to know if at all everyone would come out, Cynthia McKinney, will be there, and I thank you so much for what you do, educating us and everything else, and Dr. Clark would love, I mean, he would be so proud of you, as we all are.
Well, thank you. What is happening at this convention? Why is it being held?
Well, we wanted to know, not only... we are not satisfied with any of the people that are being portrayed as our next presidential candidate. They do not have any of our issues on the agenda. They do not have any of the issues of people that make under $250,000, per se. We are the majority. We not only need so many things that, you know, they have, they're advertising they have room for Syrians and so forth, but they didn't have room for the Haitians. They didn't have a place for the people in New Orleans. They were called immigrants, the Sudanese, so many issues that have not even been addressed. And it has been a farce.
Well, there was just recently a convention of sorts, if you call it that, a meeting declared, and thousands, tens of thousands showed up in Washington, D.C. for something called Or Else, Justice Or Else. Is it, in your view, that these organizations have to get beyond the just declaration and get into what is a system, what is the construction of a system that will work, what are the priorities, not just naming them, but to what degree are they prepared to craft responses that are workable?
And that is what our convention is to address. That is precisely what it is. There, you are 100% right on that, because we are marching is no longer an effect. You know, there was a march today to close down Rikers Island. There are many more. It's like having Black Lives Matter, which is being the monies that are paying for it is a Zionist organization at the bottom. So sometimes the people that are not aware of where the money is coming from and so forth, they can be fooled, controlled, and they put roadblocks before you get to your destination. You know? So
the convention is called for what day?
The convention is tomorrow at Howard University. We're going to be in Washington, D.C., and we would, you know, we want not just the sayings, we want the or else.
What is the timeline?
You know, what are we
going
to do?
Okay, so the convention is going to be held tomorrow. What, beyond the convention, what kind of timeline do you have in terms of developing a workable plan and so forth?
UAM will be leading the charge, and we have many different, 20 different committees that are seeking to say their best, what they think is best, you know.
Okay, I will certainly follow up. I'm very much interested in how people are crafting their own responses to very real problems. So thank you so much, Veronica, for calling and letting us know about this development. Thank you.
Hi, thank you so much. And I appreciate any announcement you
can. Thank you so much. Thank you. Now, that brings us to the end of the program today. I hope it means something, and I really do enjoy, not just enjoy it, but this is work. This is a really important part of the work of creating communities, where you also create some kind of a forum in which people begin to interact with each other and to develop entirely different views and are exposed to different ways of thinking. This is very, very important. Education is also a peer effort. We can reach out to and teach each other, because there's a lot of information gathered over all these years that we've been on the planet. And this is a great way of getting that information in circulation. So thank you all for contributing so wonderfully to the program and at such a very high level. I really am honored by that. Keep it right here for greater programming coming up, too. Much more wonderful programming coming your way on PRN.FM. Let me know what you're thinking at leadstories@gmail.com. And this weekend, make it a point, if you haven't already started it, make it a point to start your own program of absolute zero tolerance for anything or anyone negative in your life. Just jettison them and get on with a more positive approach to life. That is important for you to do. And until Monday, I wish you the very best, and I thank you for the pleasure and the great privilege of your company. Bye-bye.